First of all, I would like to thank you. I would like to thank the United Methodist Women for giving me an opportunity to share with you on UMW Sunday. I get to do that at Central United Methodist Church, and they've chosen March 14th to do that. The 14th is kind of a good day. It's been an honor for me to be a part of United Methodist Women for so many years. Started out years ago in Eskridge in the church there, and because of UMW, became involved and excited about mission. And in 1988, Joe and I started doing medical mission teams, Mexico, Guatemala, Haiti, Kenya. I think that's most of the places that we've been off and on over the years. Plus, a lot of local areas and disaster response. I always say that this is the time for men to plug their ears. But as a woman, I guess, this is kind of a girl thing, I get to say, that because of United Methodist Women, which is one of the greatest, most generous giving arms to mission that exists in the United Methodist Church, that women are a powerful force for healing a broken world. And I'm honored to be a part of it. And we even allow men in at times. The two scriptures that you heard, one about Moses going to a mountaintop and having this mountaintop experience, and oftentimes where he got real excited, he felt like he was in the presence of God, even had the opportunity to talk to God, and it changed him so much. It made him glow. It just made him light up like a neon sign. And when he came back down, everybody was aware of the fact that God had done something with Moses that changed his life. Had transfigured him, had transformed him, had made him into a different person, somehow changed his heart, changed his mind, and changed who he was. Then Jesus went to a mountain to pray. And the same thing happened to him. There are other people in the Bible that we understand as having mountaintop experiences. Elijah was one of them. He went to Mount Horeb, and he was overcome with wind and rain and noise and earthquakes and all that sort of stuff, and said, you know, where's God when I need God? And discovered God in the quiet, silent moments. This was a man who had challenged kings, a man who had challenged other gods. But he too, like Jesus and Moses, were changed by an experience of God. Now in the church, sometimes we think that only special people, the preachers, for instance, hopefully, have a special in and a way to communicate with God. But actually, we sometimes believe that there are just certain people that have these transfiguring, transforming moments when they come into the presence of God. Seldom do we walk into the sanctuary. I'll retract that. God calls us to walk into every church sanctuary, preparing to have these moments, this mountaintop experience, this time when God can take us and talk with us and get into our mind and our heart and change us and transform us. Transfiguration is not something that happened then. It's something that we practice. We practice by going places that we understand to be holy ground. We practice it by many ways, by opening doors, by finding thin places. Mountaintops have thin air, and they call that as a thin place, a place where God can reach out and touch us and change our lives. Thin places, holy places, not only for people like Moses, Elijah, and Jesus, but for all of us, for you and for me. We lived for 2 years on the island of Longanove in Haiti, a tiny island that's out in the bay, about 40 miles from one side of the peninsula and about 30 miles from the other side of the peninsula. Haiti, as a country, is a third the size of Kansas. has 9 million people. There's not a lot of privacy. This little island out here has 90 to 100,000 people, only 12 police officers for 100,000 people. So needless to say, when we were going there and we were asked if we were going to take a gun, we decided that probably we'd try to help them rather than kill them. And so we didn't take anything with us. And so we got there to live for 2 years in a country that's rated as the third most corrupt country in the world. Third to Bangladesh and Somalia. And we lived there for 2 years, and we're so welcomed and so protected and so cared for. One time we decided to go for a walk across the island because it really made a lot more sense to walk than it did to ride because there were no roads. And when you have a vehicle, sometimes they like to have roads and not just bounce from rock top to rock top. So we would walk places, and we'd walk to this community called Dungar Inn. And when we got there, we ran into a bunch of young people that we knew and everything. And when we got ready to go back, well, we rode over, didn't we? We rode over in a truck. When we got ready to go back, the truck was going another direction, and we were walking back to Source of Philippe, where we lived. And a group of young people joined us and started walking with us. And we thought, hey, this is great. They're all going to Source of Philippe. I wonder why this is happening. But we walked and we talked. We shared our kind of broken Creole and a little bit of French and a little bit of English. And we had this neat conversation. And we got to a crossroads where if you went the wrong way, you went clear off the other end of the island. And if you went the right way, you went to Source of Philippe. When we got to that crossroads, the kids said, well, bye, see you later. Bye, na wapita. And they went back to Dungar Inn. And we realized that all of these young people were protecting us to make sure that we knew when we came to the crossroad what road to take. This is that country that is so corrupt. The people that are so corrupt. And very honestly, the history of Haiti for 250 years has been a history of violence, has been a history of genocide and ethnic cleansing and and racism for one reason or another. And this has been a long history, not only of the government that provides very few services for its people, but the history of most organizations, including the denominations and the churches, although it's a Christian country, it's a Catholic nation. Even within the church, power is rather misunderstood according to the way we look at that. For 250 years, this country has been broken. But the people are not. They're a very passionate people. They're a very loving people. They're people who read the Bible and pray early morning, starting at 4 o'clock in the morning, but find it very difficult to live out the precept of the gospel that they understand. On the island where we were, it was 80% illiteracy. But yet they do responsive Bible readings simply because most of the people who cannot read have memorized the scripture. But there were many people. We had a young man who worked for us, and he was a delightful young man. Had a family, had a wife and a small child. Parents that and two who were taking care of two orphans, and Louis was trying to take care of, meet his family needs and teach school. And the school teachers work on the island. They make about the equivalent of $50 a day, or $50 a month, excuse me, $50 a month to teach, but they only get paid about once every 5 months or 8 months. It makes it a little hard to live. Louis's father had been an active member of the Haitian Methodist Church, had worked for the church on the compound, and at some point was really abused by the church. So Louis said, you know, I don't know, Pastor Shirley, I, I kind of like, you know, I kind of like some of the ideas of the scriptures that I've heard. But he said, I really don't like what has happened and what I see happening in the church. The director of the school was the pastor of the church, and he was really a jerk. The church leader, the lay leader of the church and the leader on the island, was the guy that told us that 20 gallons of gasoline had disappeared in 2 weeks out of our tub because it evaporated. Was it really too hard to understand that our biggest challenge was corruption or dysfunction? Whatever, one word, they have different connotations. But Louis was wanting to learn English, and since preachers oftentimes get just a little sneaky, and I, excuse me, Kathleen, but anyway, he was asking me for some English books that he could read to practice his English. I just happened to have an extra Bible. And so I said, well, if this is in English, you can read it. So he took the Bible to practice his English. We worked with Louis. He was a delightful young man. But he really wasn't sure that he trusted God, that he even understood God, and he knew he did not trust the church. We lived on the island for 2 years. Louis was a wonderful helper for us, as were many of the young people on the island. We learned to trust them. They learned to trust us. We worked on projects of trying to find water for the very thirsty island. We went through 4 hurricanes with them. We ate oatmeal for 4 weeks while they ate virtually nothing. It is the poorest, most remote place in Haiti, which is the poorest nation in our hemisphere. So we lived with them for 2 years, sharing the bats, the rats, the big tarantulas, and a few snakes that terrified them, but we kind of liked because none of them are poisonous. And then in October of this year, we decided to come home. The church had changed leadership, had a new leader, a new president. It's designed very much like United Methodist Church. The president would fill the position of what we have as a bishop. And they had a new president of the church who said he really needed to get his organization together. He had some plans and ideas to have some changes in the church. So for us to go home, but he wanted to meet with us again to talk about some of the projects that we had going on the island, some of the things that we could do on the island eventually, and some of his plans for making changes in the church. We have about a 4-minute music video that I want you to watch. While we were coming home in October and celebrating Thanksgiving and Christmas, and then this is a video of the earthquake that happened on January 12th, and so.
In a time when fear may surround me, when storm winds have raged through the land,
and despair seems all that the eye can see, there's a shelter called hope where we can stand. No storm.
We will rise once again from the place that we're in. gifts can bring opportunity to give from your spirit and soul.
Back to Haiti in January. We went on January 7th and we went to the island of Laganov and met with Louis and DeVilma and our friends out there and talked about the projects and the programs that we had going. And then on the 11th, we went back to Port-au-Prince to meet with the church, some leaders from GBGM and UMCOR out of New York, some others like us, a small group of about 25 were meeting with the church. President Paul started that meeting on the 12th with a keynote address that said, we want to rebuild our church. We want to start over. He addressed the issues of corruption and dysfunction in the church. Addressed the issue that forever, the churches, the denominations were very centered on taking care of the church. And his dream, his hope, was that the church, under new administration, would begin to minister to the people of Haiti. Being the poorest, the most forgotten people in the world, almost. He wanted the church to minister to them, and we thought, wow, what a transformation. So all of us that were there for the meeting decided we would meet that night in order to share our response to this good news that we were hearing from the church. So the meeting was over that first day and we went out and three of the guys from New York went up to the Montana Hotel to meet with some international health workers that were coming in to address the issue of the horrible health issues in Haiti. And Joe and I went out to meet with some students that we have in school and provide scholarships for. And in the process of sitting out on the patio, the big earthquake epicenter that was about 5 minutes or 10 minutes below us occurred. And we got to ride through that with our friends as the buildings and the walls and the areas around us began to crumble, and it was noisy. It was really not the most pleasant thing in the world that we've been through. But after that, we went to work and we helped bring people out. And there was a man there. I was an old nurse, and there was a man there who was a first responder. And so we spent that evening, that afternoon and that evening, taking care of people. We had a lady who had a severe head injury. We had some broken legs. We had a broken jaw. We had a lot of people who had been clunked by big pieces of concrete. We had about 50 people that came into the what was left of our parking lot. And we kind of did triage that evening. The three guys that had been at the Montana Hotel didn't return that evening, and the driver that had dropped them off said that he had to abandon the car just a short ways from the hotel, and that he had heard on his way down the mountain back to the guest house that the Montana had gone down and was completely destroyed. So we weren't really too surprised when the guys didn't come back that night. About 1 o'clock in the morning, 1 or 2 o'clock, we got people tucked in and they slept for the night. And early the next morning, Joe went up to the Montana and came back shaking his head. Many of you know the story from TV that those three men were, like 2.5 days later, were pulled out. One of them survived and two of them did not. We could not get in touch with the island, with the people out on Laganov during that period of time. In fact, we stayed. It seemed like it was a God thing that we were there, because having lived on the island lived in Haiti for 2 years, we were not really afraid to be there. We felt that it was kind of a job that we could do to help get the teams out. We were comfortable. We knew how to get around. We also felt a little uncomfortable about leaving before the three guys were on the way home. And so we stayed for about a week after the earthquake and before we came home. Finally, after we got home, we got in touch with the island. And we've been in touch with them a number of times since then. Once they got telephone service restored, we've been getting a lot of telephone calls. But Davey, before yesterday, I was working on a sermon for here on Transfiguration Sunday, and that was always one of the scriptures that I like to ignore. I usually would kind of go some other way because I wasn't sure I really understood exactly how the transformation of Moses and Jesus applied to us. But Louis called, and we were talking, and he said, Pastor Shirley, he said, Friday, there's going to be a big prayer meeting at Petigouaf. And he said, I'm going to go. And I said, well, Louis. And he said, yeah, Port-au-Prince and Petigouaf, Langon, he said, all having this big prayer meeting. And he said, people are so afraid here. And I said, what are they afraid of? Well, he said, they're afraid that the water is going to come up. He said, honestly, they think it's the end of the world. He said, people believe that the world is coming to an end. And I said, well, Louis, what are you doing? And he said, well, I've been reading the Bible. I've been reading that Bible you gave me. And he said, I can't find any place in there that tells me that we can know when the end of the world is going to come. And he said, I've been trying to share that. I've been trying to tell people that. And he said, honestly, Pastor Shirley, he said, I think I've become a follower of Jesus at this time. And what we're going through, he said, only the Bible is making sense to me right now. And in that sentence, transfiguration, transformation, the experience of God, God maybe not in the earthquake, but God in the praise singing and the prayers that are offered every night by the people that are living in parking lots and parks and streets, by the people who probably will not move back into a home for at least 2 years, maybe 5 years. People who are eating even less often now than they did for years. Gather every night after sundown and every morning before sunrise. Sing praises to God and offer prayers. And the church is saying, we want to be a little different. We want to minister to the people. And even the government of Haiti is saying, we want to be more transparent in our international work. Before us is the possible transformation, transfiguration of an entire nation. If God can do that in a country, take the worst of chaos and turn it into something beautiful. My God, what can He do in your life? Amen. I think our closing hymn is Let There Be Peace on Earth. And I'm going to ask that we kind of sing it as a lullaby as we seek to know God. With the peace of Christ in your head and the love of God in your heart. Amen.